Hey everyone, welcome back to the Unmastered Class, where we pick apart the not-so-obvious parts of adulting. I'm Jake Dreyfuss.
And I'm Lance Pendleton. And Jake, do you ever find yourself trapped in a self-help book vortex? You know, the one where you're like reading for motivational book after motivational book and finding things really like inspiring, but somehow not really changing anything.
Yep, it's a self-help merry-go-round. And today we've got the perfect guest to help us hop off. Meet Nick Hutchinson, the genius behind the Book Thinkers podcast and best-selling author of Rise of the Reader, Strategies for Mastering Your Reading Habits and Applying What You Learn. Welcome to the podcast, Nick.
Jake, Lance, I'm excited to be here. And I like that, the self-help merry-go-round. I think a lot of people get stuck on that thing and they can't get off.
We're talking today about being on that sort of like that hamster wheel that we talk about for self-help. You know, we're super excited to have you because, you know, Jake and I in our fields of work have spent kind of years working with people who are looking for solutions to, again, personal, professional development and things like that. So like we're in that specialty area of personal professional development, which is a lot of books are written about. And there's a lot of quote unquote deep thinkers in, you know, the process of the things that we do. But, you know, we thought you'd be the perfect person for us to start talking to. And before we dive in, let's just kick it off. Tell us what sparked your mission to transform readers into doers. Because like, what's the background of this? We'd love to understand your why.
Well, when I was growing up, what might surprise anybody that can see my background, because I've, like we were joking around before we pressed record, I have like 1,000 books behind me, is that I was not much of a reader. I was more of the athlete stereotype, not really much of the academic. I mean, you couldn't pay me to do my homework when I was growing up. And that behavior, that attitude against reading followed me through most of my college experience as well. But everything changed for me when I took an internship going into my senior year of college at a local software company. And my boss, Kyle, shout out Kyle and thank you, Kyle. He recognized what I would best describe as unfulfilled potential, right? I was pretty rough around the edges. I was kind of a know-it-all sales guy intern. And Kyle said, listen, man, you're commuting an hour each way, 5 days a week. He said, listening to the same song for the 500th time isn't going to change your life, but the right podcast might. And so I actually started by listening to podcasts where successful people were being interviewed about what made them successful. And within a couple of weeks, I realized that so many of these successful people gave at least some credit for their success to the books that they were reading. And so I went to my local Barnes & Noble after hearing the same titles 500 times, and I grabbed a stack of books. And the rest is history because I started to use those books to solve problems and build skills and rise to my potential. And to make a long story short, not everybody takes action on the books they're reading. So I started to post the books I was reading online. I developed a community and I accidentally became a subject matter expert on how to implement personal development books. And so we did a few surveys a couple of years back. We had thousands of people take these surveys. And I think across the board, almost 100% of people admit that there's more room to retain and implement even more from the books they're reading. So it is a universal problem. A lot of people deal with, you know, wanting to get more out of these books. And I think it's because we're not taught how to properly retain and implement. So anyway, I'm super passionate about this subject. I went from non-reader to believing that the right book at the right time can change somebody's life permanently.
You know, I guess, Nick, my question would be in your journey and your path to discovery of how you came across this, just for like those of us and our listeners that maybe don't really have a lot of experience in self-help books, you know, what is the thing that you found most compelling or most interesting in terms of like the beginning exploration of this process? Because I know a lot of people that you know, there's self-help books out there that they think of like, oh, that's interesting, but I'll get to that eventually and sort of the thing. But like, what is the thing that you think draws most people in or drew you in?
And I was first getting into this space. I saw this wonderful TED Talk by Ty Lopez. Now, Ty gets a bad rap too. He's an internet marketer here in my garage with the Lamborghinis and stuff. But during a TED Talk that Ty was giving, he said to the audience, how much would you pay to come over to my house next weekend and mastermind with Arnold Schwarzenegger? He's going to be there talking about bodybuilding. And Gandhi is going to be there talking about peace and movements and purpose. And Steve Jobs will be there talking about innovation and entrepreneurship. And he went down the line, just naming like the best of the best in every area of life. People are throwing out crazy numbers, tens of thousands of dollars. And he says, well, obviously, most of these people aren't alive today. They're not at my house next weekend for a mastermind, but I do have a library with their biographies and autobiographies, books written about them, books written by them. And those books are available for a heck of a lot less than the numbers you're throwing out. So what makes these books so special? I mean, you can get access to the world's healthiest, wealthiest, and happiest people. And it's not that expensive. And it's the best of what they've got to offer. I had a mentor tell me one time, he's like, Nick, I would rather read one of Tony Robbins' books than spend a full day at a mastermind with Tony Robbins one-on-one. And I'm like, why? That doesn't make any sense. And he goes, it's the best of the best. It took him years of consolidating and simplifying the information that's in that book. Whereas when you're with him in person, you're going to get kind of a sporadic, mixed messaging, overcomplicated, complex version of that same message. Plus with the book, you can go back to it over and over and over again. You can sit with it. You can reflect on it. And I think some of those are the reasons why I'm drawn to the industry. The world's best and most successful people have documented their lives, or other people have documented their lives, and they're available. You can reflect on the books. You can spend your time. It's self-paced. And there's a book to solve every problem that we face as humans.
Doing some research before meeting you today, we found out that, according to the New York Post anyway, the average person starts reading self-help books when they're 14 years old. I guess, A, does that surprise you? I feel like it's a little young. And like, B, in your experience, what are people looking for? That's a pretty young age, I think, to start trying to discover. So what do you think's behind all this?
That does surprise me, although I feel like once an adult starts reading personal development books or self-help books, they might pass them on to their children or start to get their children involved, because a lot of the problems that we face in, let's say, our 20s and our 30s are a product of issues that happened in those early years, right? Around the age of 14, I would imagine. I mean, for me, I was very socially anxious. I would stay home sick from school to avoid presenting. And, you know, I would like beg my classmates to do the presenting, and, you know, I would do all the other work. And so I started to read about solving problems and building skills so that I felt more comfortable in my own skin and could operate in society a little bit more efficiently. And so I bet my guess is that a lot of adults, when they start to have children, they become a little bit more aware and they want their kids to start reading this material. So it does surprise me a little bit, but maybe that's the reason. And then to answer the second part of the question, books solve problems. You know, a lot of us think that our lives are unique. We think we are special. And unfortunately, that victim mentality does kind of pervade a lot of Western culture these days. But instead, you could say, wow, around 100 billion people have lived before me. And I bet a number of them figured it out. And they documented their greatest life lessons, which maybe took them decades of trial and error to learn, inside the pages of a book.
So focusing back in sort of like in our unmastered class area, right, of the fact that for our listeners, you know, we often don't know, like, what are the small, simple things to help me get started, right? You know, let's start with the first thing. Is there sort of an ideal number of self-help books that you think that people could read in a year, should read in a year, and like kind of what's overkill, what's too much?
I definitely think quality becomes a lot more important than quantity. There's a line that I've sort of come to develop over the years, which is the slow, nuanced experience of implementing one great book is better than the fast, superficial experience of reading 52 in a year. Right. You hear the average CEO reads 52 books in a year. It's like, I don't know where that came from. I think it's a marketing ploy, but the slow, nuanced experience of one will always beat the fast, superficial experience of 52. In as little as 15 minutes twice a day, you can read 2 books a month. And I think that's a great starting place. 15 minutes in the morning and 15 minutes in the evening is 30 minutes a day. For somebody who's just starting out, 30 minutes of reading is equivalent to roughly 20 pages. You do that Monday through Friday, that's 100 pages a week. Most of these books average 200 pages nowadays. So 400 pages a month is 2 books a month. That's solving 2 very specific problems in your life, or at least building 2 skills or satisfying 2 curiosities every month by replacing a little bit of social media in the morning and maybe just the first 15 minutes of your Netflix in the evening with reading a great book. So when somebody says, I don't have enough time, or I can't really read that many books, it's just a question of, do you want to serve your future self? Can you give up a little bit of social media? Not the whole thing, just a little, and maybe just the first 15 minutes of your evening Netflix or sports or whatever with reading a great book. That's how fast it can happen.
Sort of expanding on what you just talked about on why we binge things and then forget them. Are we just sort of addicted now into being inspired these days?
I've gone through phases. There was a time where I felt like if I wasn't doing it, that I wasn't living up to my potential. And Nick, you have something on your Instagram page that I really relate to, like kind of the meaning of life, at least as I've heard it, is like to enjoy the passage of time. And I think that's like the first thing on your page. And so I've actually stopped putting that pressure on myself of late. In fact, I actually, if you look at my Facebook page, I mail out books I've read to people. I say, hey, who wants this? And by the way, fun fact, USPS, you can mail books in media mail. And it costs like $1 to send a Tim Ferriss book anywhere in the country with tracking. So anyway, I have a different relationship. So now I savor what I read. I still take notes, but I don't binge because I didn't feel any better.
What I find most interesting about getting sucked into that cycle is that for me, I view it also as a way for people, it's a form of escapism. You know, sometimes the idea of feeling like there's this element or aspect of my life that feels unfulfilled, that if I'm reading about how all these other people are mastering these concepts, there's somehow that I have this hope element, which I think just sort of drives our dopamine up and creates this positive feeling of opportunity, right? And that when you then go into the application of it, there's limitations around your time, your energy, your efforts, and how you can execute on that stuff. Yeah. And then we get stuck right back into what's the next dopamine driver that I'm going to have. Well, there's a great book that tells me how to live my entire life in 7 minutes in one day. And I'm like, well, there's a lot more minutes than that. But so like, you see, like, I think there's sometimes that hope factor that I can sort of not feel the way that I'm feeling to escape it. But Nick, what do you think about that?
You know, I've got a couple of funny analogies here. Like, imagine you, that really hammer this point home. Imagine you wanted to cook the world's best chicken parm. That's my favorite meal. So you buy an entire set of cookbooks on chicken parm and you read them front, back, left, right, up, down. Like, you memorize the entire books. There's coffee stains and dog ears and highlighter and notes in the margin. And you even buy all of the ingredients, but you never make the chicken parm. That would seem really weird. You do all of this work and then you just don't do the final step. Yet people read books on entrepreneurship and they don't start businesses. They read books on dating and they never ask anybody out. They read books on dieting and they never actually try the diet. And so I think a little bit of awareness that this is an issue and a problem that people face, productive procrastination or whatever you want to call it. Like, I think that's kind of the first step. Now, I have a solution, which I'll just throw at you guys real quick, that I've developed over time, and it really seems to work for people. And that is setting a SMART goal for every book that you read. And SMART is a goal setting acronym that's normally used in business. It stands for specific, measurable, attainable, relevant, and time bound. And so people don't typically do this with books, but this is what I've found works really well. You set a SMART goal. So Lance, toss out a book that you've read recently.
It was a Danielle Steele novel called Mother May I Sleep with Danger.
Well, toss out a nonfiction book that you've read recently.
It's a self-help book. I've loved it for many, many years and recommend it to many of my clients, The Subtle Art of Not Giving a Fuck.
So if you were going to choose to read that book because you just get caught up in your feels and you get really emotional and you react poorly to people and you see this book.
Have you been talking to my wife? I'm sorry.
Yes, actually, she told me to say that. No, I'm just kidding.
She's actually right here.
instead of just reading the book and hoping that it's going to solve your problem, set a SMART goal. So a SMART goal might be something like find and implement at least one strategy for passing through emotion quicker and not caring what everybody else thinks of me by the end of May. So that's specific. I know what I'm looking for. It's measurable. At the end of May, did I implement one new strategy for passing through negative emotions and caring less about what people think of me? Is it attainable? Yes. I didn't say like tattoo your face to prove that you don't care what other people think, but just find and implement one strategy. Is it relevant? Of course it is. Every single time I react poorly, I get in trouble. And also, every time I let other people make me insecure and I compare myself to others, I feel terrible. Like, yeah, I want to eliminate that. So it's relevant. It's emotional. And then time bound by the end of May. You give yourself a deadline to take action because Parkinson's law states that a task will expand to the amount of time that we give it. And if you don't give yourself a deadline to implement something from the book, you won't ever take any action. You'll just read the next book. So I think setting a SMART goal and then writing it on the inside cover of the book and reviewing it every time you read another chapter will keep your brain filtering for that solution to your problem. That's emotional and it has a deadline, and that'll kind of keep you in that lens of I need to take action.
That's a cool tip. I like the writing it on the inside of the book because that keeps it real and at the forefront and stuff like that.
Yep. Yeah. I do. I love that. And you touched on something kind of the endless cycle, or because generally we're not reading with SMART goals. We are going through this cycle. So you've already kind of heard my take on it, but you know, Nick, because for our listeners' benefit, Nick speaks all over the world on this topic. So we're very lucky to have him answering these questions. So how does this endless cycle of constantly reading and searching and not probably implementing SMART goals actually impact our growth and transformation possibilities?
You know, I've had the chance to meet and interview so many of the world's most successful authors and business people, and I've realized that success is holistic. If you are rich, but you have, you know, terrible health and terrible relationships, you're not successful. If you have amazing relationships, but you're poor, you can't impact as many people as you could if you had a little bit of money, right? Financial scarcity is a tough thing to deal with. And if you're healthy, if you can run 1,000 Ironman triathlons, but you have no money in the bank and everybody hates you, like, that's not a fun place to be either. Mm-hmm. So I think that success is holistic. You know, for me, these books have allowed me to become healthy, wealthy, happy, have great relationships, and more spiritually connected. And that can happen at any stage for any one of us. So these books, they solve problems, they build skills, they help us live up to our potential. And that only happens by taking action. One of my favorite books that I read, it was one of the first books I read, Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill. He says, action is the real measure of intelligence. Action is the real measure of intelligence. So if you read a great book and choose not to take action, it's not going to change your life. It's only by taking action that you start to enjoy the passage of time and find that kind of holistic success that I just mentioned.
So I want to expand on one element of what you just said, because a lot of the folks that I work with in my, you know, my coaching and personal development practice that I work with people through is this constant need for improvement cycle they get stuck in. And so a big thing that I preach to people is this concept of as is. You know, you are good enough as is, and that you can really be confident in that you've achieved this spot in your life because you are good at things, and that you don't need to be constantly seeking the next great thing that's going to somehow improve or change something before you value who you are as an individual first. What would you say is a good way for people to do this in a healthy fashion?
It's a very important question. For me, I am fulfilled when I make progress in my life, or I help other people make progress in their lives. And I've shifted from comparing myself to others to comparing myself to where I used to be. And I've made progress compared to where I used to be. And I think that that lens of viewing the gain instead of the gap, and not comparing yourselves to other people, but comparing yourselves, you know, yourself to where you used to be, coupled with like mindfulness, you know, trying to live in the present moment, gratitude, you know, all of these things, but also noticing that like, if I'm not at least steadily making progress, I do think we are all enough, but I think it's a little bit of extra fulfillment if you can make progress. So I don't know, it's a balancing act. It's this fine line between order and chaos, your comfort zone, you know, and the danger zone, you know, being grateful for the present moment, but also serving your future self. And if you can balance those two thoughts in the same sentence, and like you can be calm with them at the same time, the yin and yang, it is a beautiful place to be.
And around that, you know, Jake, I'd be curious also what you think about this. I'll be fully transparent, because that's, you know, what we do here on the Unmastered class. I have a deep rooted like eye twitch that happens, and because I get a lot of my clients that come to me and say, "Oh, someone recommended this fantastic book," and 9 times out of 10, it's some life hack book, and I'm like, "Please stop!" Like, for me, there's a difference between, as you said, biographies, the learning that we can find from all of these wonderful people that have come before us, or certain ways of thinking about things differently. And by no means am I saying they're all bad, but when someone comes to me and says, you know, the 4-day work week How do I do this, Lance? I have to figure out how to do my 4-day work week or, you know, the 12-week year. I'm like, listen, there's 52 weeks in a year for a reason. You're going to need all 52. Promise me. I promise you, like, it's going to be good, right? Like, tell me the difference for you, though, between what we talk about as learnings of help and what I consider sort of the life hack function.
Mm.
Yeah, I have mixed thoughts on this. I guess the first thing is that most authors are trying to improve the lives of their readers. And sometimes, because there are over a million books published every year in the US, you have to sell what that person wants to be sold on the cover. And then inside the book, you have to actually deliver what they really needed in the first place. I agree that there are some bad actors in the space. And so here's just my quick kind of course or checklist to go through when evaluating a book. Number one, go on Amazon. It has the most data and see how many reviews that book has. If it has a lot of reviews, that's not an accident. It's tough to promote and market a book. And the only way it really takes off over a long period of time is if it helps people and that word of mouth process starts. So a lot of books that are successful, you know, for a minute because somebody is really popular and has a lot of followers on social media, they typically die off almost immediately. There's a big initial surge and then they stop selling. But the books that continue to sell, I'm talking for like a decade plus, it's because they genuinely help people. Now, when evaluating reviews on Amazon, I recommend tossing out the 5-star reviews and tossing out the 1- and 2-star reviews because those are typically written from a place of emotion and not logic. You either love the author or you hate the author, so you're slightly biased. I say toss those out. But the 3- and 4-star reviews, that's where the magic happens. That's where you're going to see, I bought the book for this reason. This is what it delivered, but this is what was missing. And you can find a lot of magic when you filter for those 3- and 4-star reviews. I also recommend looking up the author. You know, a lot of times, like, you don't want to read a book about how to make $1 million in a year from somebody who's never done it before. And that unfortunately does happen. It's very easy to publish a book in the States these days through Amazon KDP. It doesn't cost any money. You just upload a Word document and you're good to go. So yeah, there are some bad actors, but most of these authors, they're trying to positively impact their readers. And the life hack thing, you know, some of them are useful, some of them are not useful. You know, you just kind of have to pick and choose and filter through. But just remember, if you're listening to this show, it will always take longer than you think to solve your problem. And as long as you go in with like, this book might solve my problem, it's not a guarantee. And I should also expand the timeline a little bit, then at least you have good expectations and you won't be fooled by anything.
Well said. So as we wrap up for the unbelievable amount of awesome information that you've given us, and thank you for your time in here and doing this today, because again, there's like 10 takeaways I just had in all of this, which is so great. You know, we're starting a new tradition now on the Unmastered class. And so we want you to be the first person to answer our wrap up question. You ready?
I'm ready.
If you were going to enroll in an Unmastered class on a topic completely outside of your current expertise, right? Now, something that you wish you'd learned when you were younger, what would it be and why?
And we know we just learned how often to wash his jeans. That's good.
The things that caused me a lot of insecurity in my childhood were always, and nobody ever taught these things, how to be an effective communicator and communicate with confidence, because that caused me a lot of pain when I was younger. Mm-hmm. And the other is financial literacy, the basics of understanding how money works. Money, I've learned now, right? I just turned 30. So I learned throughout my 20s that we're all forced to play the game. And so you might as well be good at it. You don't have to love money to realize that you have to exchange it for food, for water, for shelter. And the more money you have, the more good you can do by giving back to others. So those are the two things that come to mind: effective communication and financial literacy.
That's completely amazing, because if you go back a couple episodes, we have an entire podcast on communication with Cole, who's awesome. And our upcoming podcast is going to be with an amazing, unique accountant who's going to help us talk about the basics of financial literacy to set ourselves up for all the things that we don't know, which is so cool.
I love both of those. Well, I'll throw one more out that maybe you haven't covered yet. Ooh. I wish somebody taught me when I was younger the importance of travel, international travel, as a form of personal development, but also just a way to mature faster, get more perspective on this beautiful world. I think growing up sometimes in the US, we're a little sheltered with our understanding of how things actually are out there. And so that would have been fun. I didn't realize how accessible or freeing or amazing it was to travel.
And how not to get abducted while doing it.
I was like, and how to read a map.
Yeah,
how about that? Let's start there.
This is so amazing. Well, listen, Nick, thank you so much for taking the time to help us unpack all of this. You know, it really has been fantastic. We're so grateful. And you know, we're going to make sure we leave links to more of your information in the show notes and encourage everybody listening to this to give your podcast a listen to as well.
You know, for the lifelong learners out there, remember, real transformation lies in the doing, like Nick said, not just in the knowing. So please keep Nick's tips top of mind, connect with him on social, and also book him for speaking events. He's wonderful. And next time you dive in your self-help book, I hope you think of Nick and all the smart goals you should be creating.
Yeah. Totally. So thank you everybody for joining us on the Unmastered class. And if you liked today's episode, don't forget to hit the subscribe button and leave us a rating. And remember, keep evolving, keep learning, but don't forget that at the center of it all, you are good enough as is.
Oh, that was so nice.
I'm gonna try. Ooh.